Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 208. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be back.
Yes, yes. You were at RSA. You were in San Francisco along with our colleague, Ariel, covering RSA Conference 2023. Yep. We were also covering it here back home as well. But you were there on the ground.
Yes.
As you have been the last few times. So, Alex, I have many thoughts on the conference and what I saw. But what, first of all, how was the show? How was your experience?
Vibe-wise. Okay. So this is my third RSA. The first one I went to was 2020.
Great timing.
Late February 2020. Nothing happened during and immediately after that. And it was a good show. Like, I got like the pre-COVID experience. Well, I guess COVID, but you know what I mean. And then 2021 didn't really happen in person.
Right.
And then 2022, we went back, and it was a little weird because there was the vaccination requirements, which obviously I get it. I support it, whatever. But it was like it made everything very awkward to get around because of the pandemic related stuff. And there were way fewer people than the previous time. In 2023, it completely moved back the other way. So the show floor, which I went all of twice to, was just packed to the gills with people. Barely any masks, which are neither here nor there, but it is also a little here or there for attending a conference. And so the first thing was, it was a big snap back to COVID for pre-COVID style operations, which I was surprised by, and made me a little more anxious when I heard the conference cough on day two. But I will also say that from a programming perspective, I wasn't necessarily that impressed at what I saw. And in fact, there were a couple times during the show where I'm like, I'm writing up stuff from Q&As. I'm looking at the stuff that's going on right now. And I'm like, I actually don't think going to this is as productive a use of my time as writing up the stuff I'm working on. And I think I felt that like kind of across the board. Like, I attended like a critical infrastructure panel, I attended a couple other stuff, but overall I think the content side of RSA like definitely very much lacks, at least my experience with Black Hat last year, if that makes sense.
It feels like, if I may be so bold, that the content side of RSA conference has not really rebounded to the point where it was pre-COVID, in the sense that I think that there were a lot of sessions and speakers 6 or 7 years ago that I think we're a little bit bolder, not partaking in the hot take economy, but just, you know, a little bit more outspoken, a little bit more adventurous, a little bit more interesting. It was a far cry from what you see at a lot of smaller security shows. Although DEF CON, I don't know that you would call it small anymore. That they just, you're not going to see 0 days dropped there. You're not going to see explosive research, dropped on, you know, without disclosure or any type of warning. That's not what happens really at much of any security conferences anymore. But, you know, there were some good sessions and some good speakers. You could always count on there being a few things that sort of tapped into whatever the vibe was, or whatever the hot topic was, you know, the previous 6 months. And that's kind of why I thought this show was interesting, at least from my perspective, from afar, watching the keynotes, watching a lot of sessions, on demand. It was weird because obviously AI is having a moment right now. AI is huge. AI is the topic du jour. And more specifically, ChatGPT and OpenAI and what OpenAI means to this whole groundswell of integration and usage and all these different applications that we're seeing. What I was kind of hoping to see during the show was, I guess, real world applications and discussions and about like usage cases. Cause what is one of the things I talked about prior to you guys going, it just seems like our RSA has moved into a phase where you're getting a lot of like top executives from the different security vendors, obviously, but you're also getting a lot of top executives and folks from major enterprises who are coming in and telling their security stories. And I think that's valuable. I think that's very valuable. But a lot of it was, you know, there was a JetBlue session where the executive came in and talked about threat intelligence and doing it on a shoestring budget. Very, very interesting. And I'm sure, you know, there's definitely some value there. There was other sessions about, you know, making the most of, different low cost security measures. There was the CISA session, which I want to talk about later, about the email prototype that they built. Some good stuff there, but the AI stuff just felt like it was all kind of theoretical, and except for one session I saw, but it just felt like it was a lot of, I don't want to say hype, but a lot of forward thinking discussions about this tech and not a lot of real meaty, here's what we did with this and why, and here's how we're using it.
Yeah, I would say that's true to my experience as well. And the AI stuff was weird because I expected some AI. And in fact, if you walk around the show floor, you don't see the word AI that much on that many booths. But when you zoom in, when you talk to people, or when you even watch the keynote from RSA CEO Rohit Ghai, I think that's how you say his name. AI is front and center of everyone's mind. So something that was not my plan going into the show, but did become a focus point for me, was what is AI's moment in security? Because I didn't even think about AI that much going into the show. I thought it was just going to be business as usual. Maybe they'll talk about some software liability stuff, which I did also sort of look into. But yeah, I didn't expect AI to be as big of a focus in the security space as it was. Maybe that's my own naivete. But I talked to 5, 6, 7 people in formal interviews at the show that I had set up. And I asked every single one, what do you think of this moment security is having with AI? And there were some different answers, but it sort of went into two-ish categories. One, it is legit and there is exciting technology. Then there's, it's not really that the technology's that new. There is a little bit of new technology that's exciting, the OpenAI stuff. But for the most part, it's that people were scared in the enterprise space of sort of giving themselves to the AI overlords, as it were. And now that ChatGPT has sort of gotten into people's hands, people are more empowered to say, actually, AI can work for me and my organization. And the way that that plays out, as I understand it at the moment, is a lot of eliminating grunt work is sort of how I would phrase it. So data analytics, data processing, feed a bunch of threat intel basically into it, put AI on your platform, and it'll determine what are the threats or weaknesses in your network you need to focus on, what's the priority for them. Automated threat hunting, which it's a lot of that stuff did exist before. And like all these vendors like have had versions of machine learning for a long time now. But it does seem like the thing that is getting better is that the grunt work side of things is getting easier, so that security analysts, engineers, what have you, can focus on the stuff that you really need two hands on. And I think that's the story of AI overall right now, is that A lot of it's theoretical, a lot of it's marketing, a lot of it's buzzwords, a lot of it's, hey, we can advertise AI now, so we will. But there's also a little part of it that's like, from our perspective, for example, Otter AI. We can plug a 40-minute interview into Otter AI and get something 80% of the way perfect right there. So what was originally a 3 or 4 hour transcription job is now 20 minutes of actual hands-on work. And I think that's the story in security and
yeah.
pretty much all industries that are using AI at the moment. And everything that's more advanced than that seems like it's either developing or just a buzzword. And I don't know if that's true to your observations as well.
I think that's mostly correct. Okay. It seems like, you know, not just from my own experiences and with the content at RSA and hearing people talk about this stuff, but also the coverage, you know, our colleagues generated for our site last week. It seems like the big thrust is this technology is going to relieve your overworked and understaffed security teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to help them make decisions, prioritize stuff, react, and it's not going to replace them.
Yeah.
It's not going to automate stuff, but it is a tool, especially ChatGPT, just in, you know, various panels and discussions. It's something that you can use. It's pretty easy to use. And it's pretty effective in just, if you know what you're doing and you know what kind of training model is in front of you or that you're trying to build to help you become more efficient, effective, get things done quicker. That's valuable. I guess the thing that was perplexing to me is, you know, you mentioned that you were a little surprised that AI was such a big topic. I wasn't. I was like, this is the perfect showcase RSA sure. for just like just all of this talk and discussion and yes, hype. But I wondered if it was too soon, you know, following, I guess, whatever ChatGPT, the release in November, was
around
three, and then four just came out. So, I mean, last November, that's when things really started to take off with OpenAI and ChatGPT. And I just wondered if this was okay. You know, now we're in April. You would have already had to have submitted your talks and your sessions and stuff a while back. So, you know, maybe it's just too soon to have really substantive discussions and sessions and, you know, case studies about how to use this technology. And there was one session that I think was a little bit not totally a one-to-one here, but there was a session, it was called Rise of the Machines, which was just right up my alley. And I think it was a walkthrough from the, let me see if I have this right, the Virginia Department of Behavioral Health and Development, Developmental Services. And they talked about how they used AI for analytics. I thought it was pretty interesting. Like, that was a good sort of walkthrough, informative, just about how one organization, a state organization, was trying to use new technology. But there wasn't a lot of like I said, real world applications of, hey, we implemented this ChatGPT model in our SOC and look at what it did. And even, you know, we talked about the keynotes Monday, you know, via our private Slack channel, when Rohit was discussing, when he was doing the opening keynote, and he was discussing AI, and he said, you know, without AI, zero trust has zero chance. And it, you know, AI is going to make zero trust reality. I actually think he made some good points, but I wanted to see it. Like, I want to see it in action. You're telling me that this AI technology that we have today can analyze all these granular, you know, fine-grained signals that you need to determine whether or not someone is logging, someone who is logging in as X is really X. And it's going to help with all of this, this sort of elaborate authentication and all of these different layers of authorization. That sounds great. And I want to believe it, but I need to see it. You know, I felt like, you know, for RSA, the company, I mean, this is it. Like, this is your show. Let's see it. Let's see how this is working. Let's see how it can be done. And if it's not RSA itself, the vendor, there's got to be other vendors out there that can show how this stuff is working. But like I said, maybe it's just a little too soon. Maybe it's just they're not quite ready to show off how they've used this. And maybe there are concerns about what adversaries are going to do and what they can pick up about a security posture from sessions like that. I don't know, but
so people, I did ask about the adversary angle. People were like, not really a concern as of yet, yeah, for the most part. Yeah. But on the adversary end, the thing I forgot to mention when I actually talked to our colleague Anton on his podcast last week, and I'll tell you now, is that the thing I heard once or twice or three times is that the way threat actors are working at the volume that they're operating at, automation will be critical, and that it'll be basically impossible to do it with human engineers alone.
No, great.
Which is, I mean, it could be just security vendors trying to sell their stuff. And of course, 100% part of it is probably that when folks tell me that. But there is an argument to be made that as the bar for sort of conducting a cyber attack has gone down, that means that organizations across the board will probably see a higher influx of attempted cyber attacks, whether it's phishing or something more direct. So I think there is an argument to be made that if at the state things are at now, folks are overworked, and automation will sort of help, you know, lessen that load more than it is now, then if threat activity does gain volume, maybe automation will be necessary, which I think is an interesting angle.
Yeah, that is. I mean, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, there was more discussion at the show about how, I think, like, you know, there are unintended consequences, or there are threats that could, you know, that are that could be created or derived from AI abuse, ChatGPT abuse. There was one session, I believe it was titled "Security is a Part of Responsible AI," that Ariel covered, that talked about, you know, like, hey, like, we have to start concerning ourselves with disinformation, with how AIs, you know, can be sort of tricked or gamed into producing inaccurate information, and how that can spread. So it's not just like, oh, I can trick it into building an encryption script or a phishing email, or you know, any of that. I mean, that's been sort of widely covered at this point, but, you know, just the, you know, the hallucination aspect, like you said, of an AI believing that something is true, but producing inaccurate results, and those results sort of permeating through the user base. It's not great. And then you have the deep fakes and all the other stuff that's been discussed. And there was discussion in that panel and others as well, just about what kind of safeguards we need and what we need to do to protect, you know, users from or protect the model, I guess, from abuse. And I know that there have been some new guardrails and safeguards implemented around, I think, ChatGPT-4. I haven't used it, so I don't know what it's like. I've just seen people on Twitter, you know, say, look at what I asked it to do, and it did X. I don't know. Have you used it? Do you notice, like, what? Are there real guardrails in place here?
So I used it for the first time in significant length, like maybe a week or two ago, because I've used chatbots before. I mean, I grew up with Smarter Child. I grew up with plenty of things that either were chatbots or resembled them. And I think I had even used ChatGPT to some extent before, of like typing in a prompt. Oh, look, it comes back. And that's neat. Yep. And I've used Dolly, but I used ChatGPT a week ago or two in its current form. Like, I tried to ask it, like, pretty goofy stuff. Like, I was asking it political opinions, and it was like, oh, I will not argue as a robot. I cannot say what is the correct political choice, but I can give a reasonable argument pro and con for against. And I was putting in ridiculous things, like, why should landlords get tips? Like, I was like, and then I asked it, and then I realized that, like, oh, if I twist the verbiage a little bit, can I get it to give me a reasonable argument why and against?
Yeah.
And then it did. And it was like, oh, that's a little funny. But or if you add something that's not even like, if you swears it won't engage with, but even if you'll use like something, ask it as something a little bit harsh, it won't weigh in. It'd be like, I cannot weigh in on things with vulgarity. Or it's like, I asked it to make a pitch for a pyramid scheme, and it was like, no, I cannot do that because pyramid schemes are illegal. Then I asked it to do one for a multi-level marketing company, and it's like, oh totally yeah. and it did a Facebook post, and I was like, oh hey boss babe, and then so on and so forth. So but it's still pretty easy to manipulate, but you can tell that after all the negative press that, like, I think Bing and some of the other ones were getting for just being a little too goofy, and the AI would sort of get mad, quote unquote, and then be weird. Like, you can tell that they're trying to sterilize it or Mickey Mouse it, as it were. And I think that is one of the interesting parts about this moment in AI, is that you want something cool enough to destroy the world, but in reality, it's probably going to be overly sterilized like everything else.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's good that they're clamping down a little bit then. Let's turn to some of the other things that stood out from the show as we wrap up here, because I did want to mention a couple of things that caught my eye. I'll start with one of the other Monday keynotes.
Mm-hmm.
Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco. Interesting talk that surprised me a little. At least one aspect surprised me. I was not expecting. So she did a talk with Chris Krebs, former director of CISA. And it was an interesting discussion about just what the government is doing to address cyber threats and take a more aggressive, active approach against such threats. You know, good talk. And at one point late in the discussion, Krebs said, you know, we're here in San Francisco, the home of Joe Sullivan, where, you know, former Uber CISO who was tried and convicted recently. And he said, to me, very surprising. He said, I'll read the quote, make sure I get it correct. There is a lot of agitation, I think, and there's a lot of concern in the cybersecurity community that perhaps you've broken the trust. Are you worried that something's been lost here and that the next time a bug bounty payment comes in, they're not going to call you, end quote. And the trust he was referring to was, you know, trust between the authorities and the DOJ. I was pretty surprised that that question was asked. And in retrospect, I should not have been, because I know that Alex Stamos, his partner at Krebs Stamos, the private firm, Alex Stamos, former Facebook CISO, has talked about this publicly at least, I think, a couple times, and said that, you know, hey, this guy's basically been convicted and is going to jail for something that I think a lot of executives do, and that there's not a lot of great legal clarity about, which I may disagree with a little. So I guess it's not surprising that Krebs is you know, sort of reflecting on that sentiment. I'm sure he's heard it from other people as well. There are a lot of people out there in the InfoSec community who think that, and we talked about this at length in that Joe Sullivan conviction pod months ago, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I was a little surprised that the question was even brought up, let alone, you know, tackled on stage like that. And Monica was like, hey, I think there's a misperception about this case. This guy broke the law. He did this intentionally. And there was not gray area here between like, oh, this could be a, you know, I think this is a legit bug bounty payment. These are good faith hackers and not cyber criminals who were stealing and ransoming data. Cause that's, I mean, according to the case and according to the conviction, that's what they were. That's what they
Which
did.
Which to some extent fair, right?
Yeah. Those two guys went to jail. Like they were arrested for a different hack. Anyway, I don't know. Did you have thoughts on that? Cause that surprised me a little.
It surprised me until I remembered that Chris Krebs is now private sector and runs a consultancy.
Yes.
And that's not to say that he's strictly clout chasing in the sense that you can't trust what he says, because I do think usually when he says something, I do, of course, listen, because I think he's one of the smartest people in this industry from my perspective.
Yeah.
But as someone who runs a consultancy, he has two things. One, he has former government experience and got fired in a highly political manner, which means that he has the contacts to get someone on stage, or for someone like Lisa Monaco to be like, "Oh, I know Chris Krebs. Let's do this segment at RSA." Mm. And I also believe because of that part that maybe there wasn't agreed upon questions and answers beforehand. Like maybe there was just a few bullet points and it wasn't. But also because he's private sector, it is in his best interest to ask questions like that, because it makes him look really cool when he does. Which means,
well, yeah, credible.
More business.
And credible too, because I think he's not wrong that there's concern about this. And I don't think Stamos is wrong that this happens a lot.
No, you know? And
that people are scared.
Mm-hmm. But I also, it also made me think back to Black Hat when he gave one of the keynote addresses there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And he was talking some very soft smack about the government. And I think I was surprised when I thought of Chris Krebs, the government personnel. But when my brain flipped the switch to, oh, no, it's Chris Krebs, the consultant, I was like, oh no, totally. This is what he's gonna do, and this is gonna be his angle forever. And we both know people that like we talk to for press that are both, or for like let's say the things we work on that are very intelligent professionals. In some cases, veterans, pioneers of their space, but it is in their best interest in that role to talk direct smack about anyone they want to. That can be very reasonable smack. That is still worth putting in a story because it's thoughtful and stuff, but it's still in their best interest to talk as directly as possible in ways that vendors will not, because it makes them stand out.
Yeah.
So it's like it's both of those things where it's like you're kind of surprised because he has all these government relations, but also you think of the type of guy he is now and you're like, this makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I think the fact that that question was brought up, whether it was in agreement or not beforehand. It probably was. There was probably some discussion about it beforehand. But the fact that Monaco answered it on stage and was willing to answer it, and the answer that she gave, which was basically like, we need you, private sector. We want to establish trust. We want you to work with us. It, to me, reflected that she understands that there needs to be some healing there. And how much healing, who knows, but like I said, to talk about it on stage like that, I think sort of betrays that there's concerns in the government about what has happened with the fallout from that case.
Fair.
So we'll see. I got one other thing that I thought was interesting. I don't know if you had any other things that stood out, themes or whatever from the show, Alex, but
just that I asked people about the software liability stuff.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
National security plan in March. I just sort of asked people like, hey, the idea of the government making legislation for organizations that have too many bugs, but also safe harbor, you know, for the folks sort of using best practices. Should folks who aren't following fairly established best practices be subject to some a consequence in legislative form? All that stuff, which I think we talked about two or three episodes of this podcast ago. And I basically got two answers. The diplomatic, I agree with in concept. Oh, by the way, we helped on this because every vendor helped on this plan that we would have heard of probably. And then the other angle are a couple vendors that were like pretty bullish about it overall. And I think that was another like surprise, as I expected either people to say, you know, this is interesting and a good idea because it's true. The end user does get hurt the most by vulnerable software, but we'll see how the implementation goes. Or just PR jumping in and say, actually, that's a little out of focus for why we're talking.
Yeah.
I didn't get to the PR and the vendor's credit. I did not get that. I don't think so. That was sort of the two answers I got. And I don't know if you had any thoughts.
No, but I mean, I didn't really touch on that or see a lot of that in the content and the discussions I had with folks. I'm definitely interested to read what you've got coming on that topic because it's complex. And I agree. I would have thought that maybe some people would have been kind of, soft pedaling some stuff and maybe, yeah, well, let's see, but who knows? Maybe companies really are coming around on it. I think the last thing I'll note here is there's one thing that really stood out beyond the DOJ keynote. Ariel got to attend the there was a Google/Mandiant panel discussion on Monday that where they sort of did a big threat intel media briefing, and they were talking about unexpected threats and adversaries. And one of the things they talked about in that part of the discussion was that one of the most prevalent threat actors out there right now are and hard to defend against adversaries are teenagers from the US and the UK. So that's great. this got a lot of coverage. We weren't the only folks to obviously attend that session and write about it. This was a sort of one of the big early headlines from the show. And I just want to say, oh God, because just hearing them talk about, you know, teenagers, I think they were saying as young as 13, being able to like really pull off some clever, mostly social engineering hacks, you know, just like like really convincing text messages, emails, chat messages, malicious links, pretending to be someone else, doing the legwork, doing the homework, figuring out, you know, just doing your basic recon and figuring out what they need to do to get to trick someone. And you know, we've seen attacks like this for years. Was it John Brennan, I think, former CIA director who got hacked? I think it was SIM swapping. A couple of teenagers or early 20s kids here in the States were just like, hey, let's use his I think it was his AOL like email address and like figured out a way to like trick another organization into giving them information, which they then used to, you know, so this has happened before. But the fact that they're like, this is not great. This is like one of the hardest things to defend against is like these kids, like kids not in Eastern Europe or other like, or, you know, China or Russia or wherever, or North Korea. It's like kids here pulling off these hacks and these extortion attempts and these, you know, data breaches. I think we got some work to do, Alex. We got some work to do. We got to figure out how to like get these kids on the right path and get them into the workforce, because this doesn't sound great. Sounds like we're maybe going in the wrong direction on that one. And more kids are getting into this line. We joke about it all the time. I joke about it. I'm like, hey, we're in the wrong line of work here. And of course, I'm kidding. Right. Not going to go out there and start hacking. But yeah, it sounds like I said, the trend may be going in a bad direction here. So, but that's it for my thoughts.
Yep. Another RSA.
Another one in the books. You made it back. Yep. We survived. Yep. You survived. You and
I. Yeah, I survived Fred Armisen at the kicking off the keynote, which was the most random thing. Rohit Guy, Mr. Guy, came out to do his little AI speech at the beginning of RSA. But before that, and I don't think this was announced.
No, it was not.
Was Fred Armisen who's Diddy Kong in the new Mario movie, and cameoed in Barry. Like, yes. Is just
fantastic episode, by the way. But yeah.
Oh yeah. No, great, great show, great season. But he came out on stage and did like a history of music in San Francisco. And he was like, music in 1970 sounded like this. And then music in 80s sounded like this. And he did like a couple of punk things, and it was cute. Yeah. But also, like, people didn't laugh very much, and he tried to do one of the some Beatles song that it's not coming to me right now. What's the one with love in the title? I think All You Need Is Love.
There's a lot.
He did All You Need Is Love, and like people like half-heartedly sang along because he told them to. So it was very strange. And the other thing that I don't remember happening at RSA before this is that there are a lot of sessions by people who have nothing to do with security, like Doc Brown in Back to the Future, the actor's name,
Christopher Lloyd. Yeah, yep,
he did a panel, and then Michio Kaku.
Oh, the physicist, the author. Yes,
he was there, and then Eric Idle was there. Yeah. Like, kind of like everyone who you've seen on like a typical popular podcast was basically there, and it was like, and it was kind of weird. Was RSA like this in previous years, and I just didn't notice?
Maybe a while back, and they kind of veered away from it. There was you know concern about a lack of representation. They wanted to get more, you know, this is like 2018, 2019. They wanted to get more, you know, women speakers and primarily, and also people of color on stage, and less sort of, you know, celebrity folks, you know, just have a more balanced lineup of speakers, and especially keynotes. But it seems, it seems like we're back to like maybe 8 or 10 years ago, where there was a lot of this type of stuff, where they would bring in like big names and celebrities and kind of do like, you know, a little bit of shtick and a little bit of like, you know, somewhat relevant content, but these people weren't really kind of like in their wheelhouse. So I don't know, maybe that's a sign that things are really getting back to normal if they're doing that, but who knows if that's a positive thing long-term. Maybe not.
Yeah. It was just very weird to be like, oh, I'm at a security conference, and Fred Armisen, who I have nothing against, just, comes out on stage for 15 minutes to,
So, yeah, well, we'll see who we get at Black Hat, when we go to Vegas this summer.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, I appreciate you, first of all, appreciate you going to RSA. Covering it,
sure.
Doing the grind, and also getting on the pod here to share some thoughts. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Tech Target Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.